Hey guys, I'm pregnant and I am in my third trimester. Just to give you an update on my life, it is good to be back for another day of this program. This little show we got, this little dirty little secret that's just in between you guys and me. Welcome back to the podcast. Comedy is going to make a comeback. Comedy clubs are already opening up at limited capacity in New York, which is going to be very interesting because the winter is coming and that's when people get sick. I'm all for it. Right? Open those clubs back up. I want it. I'm itching to do stand-up again. I am so ready to start doing comedy again. It has been a drought. Haven't been up on stage consistently since March. Just doing some outdoor shows here and there. But in terms of getting up multiple times on stage on a weekly basis, that hasn't really been happening. So it's good. I think it's a great thing. There are clubs that are open in other parts of the country, not New York City, and those have been resulting in various degrees of transmission in the virus. I remember a couple months ago, I think Brian Callen and a couple other comedians toured, and right after they toured, they actually got the coronavirus. What made it worse, though, was the fact that Brian Callen was taking pictures with audience members after the show, and they didn't observe social distancing. So, yeah, it's he could have transmitted the virus to those people. But I think now, that was like a couple months ago, like early summer. I think now it's a lot more under control than it was. But again, wintertime is going to be tricky just because, you know, in the summer, who gets sick? No one really gets sick in the summer. Your immune system is the strongest. Come wintertime, though, we're all going to get sick. If you're not going to get sick from corona, you're still going to get sick from the regular flu or getting a cold. So it'll be interesting to see if the virus numbers just jump up from that. But I don't, again, I just want to do comedy. It's going to be hard for those comics who... Because there's a little bit of a tradition at the comedy club that I perform at where comedians like to fuck girls in the bathrooms below the showroom. The bathrooms in the comedy club I perform at are in the basement, and comedians will eat a girl's ass in those dirty stalls. With COVID, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to keep doing it. But I feel like if someone isn't scared to eat a stranger's ass, they might be okay with a little bit of bat juice, the Rona. Exciting times, though. So limited capacity, really not a big deal either. I think it's 25% capacity for comedy audiences, which... Even before the virus, a lot of the shows that we'd perform in New York were like five people. And if a room can fit only 40 people, 25% capacity is 10. Which, 10 people, you got a show. Especially in a small room, it feels like a lot more. So I have no problem with that. 25% capacity is completely possible. It's strange, though, because really, really established comedians have been touring all summer long. They've actually been the most active. I think the most awkward place you could be in comedy with this virus is kind of being a mid-level comic. Because if you're new, you're going to just do a bunch of outdoor mics, outdoor open mics. Because you have no standards. And plus, those mics are still helping you at that point. They're teaching you how to write a joke. Open mics are really important. I don't know if anyone listening to this podcast is aspiring to be a comedian or whatever, but I would say that open mics for the first 2-3 years in your career are extremely important just because they teach you the basics of being on stage. They teach you how to hold a microphone. You wouldn't believe how many people do not know how to hold a microphone properly. Just holding it to the side of their mouths, not talking into it, just flinching randomly on stage, like they're having little mini seizures, like they have the mildest case of epilepsy in the world. So you just learn how to be, just stand on stage and say jokes. You learn how to write a joke. And that's kind of what open mics do. And it's brutal at first, too, just because when you first start doing mics, you don't understand that comics just aren't going to listen to you. And even if they are listening, they're not going to laugh at a joke. Like, just because a joke doesn't work at an open mic doesn't mean that it doesn't work or it's not a good joke. It just means you're telling it to a room full of comics who are open micers. So they're all retarded. You can't base your, whether you keep a joke or not, based on the opinion of 50 retarded people stuffed into the basement room in the creek in the cave on a Friday night at 11 p.m. You just can't do that. However, mics start to become really detrimental once you've done enough of them after you're like 3-4 years in. And past that point, I don't think they really help that much. Just because you know how to stand on stage, you know how to write a joke. But mics actually start giving you bad feedback on which jokes work and which jokes don't work. Because the opposite effect takes place from when you first start doing comedy. People actually know you now, and so everyone in the room is your friend. So they just start to laugh at everything you say, just because they know you. And then you have a false sense of confidence when you actually go do a real show with strangers in the audience who don't know you and don't know your personality. And then you go up and you tell those jokes that you think work, but it's like, the audience has no context. They don't know you. Plus, a lot of times, you know, at open mics, you're performing to comedians, so comedians always have like the most warped sense of humor. That means the best way to get a laugh at an open mic is to just say the most fucked up shit that comes to your brain. When you're bombing, just say whatever. It's just fucked up. So what's up with these retarded Jews who Hitler's great, right? That would kill at a mic. So I was Ruth Bader Ginsburg in her ass, and she ate a retarded Mexican. Kill at a mic. You do that in front of a paying crowd, though, I don't think they'd appreciate that. So, anyways, what I was saying was the most awkward time to be a comic during this whole pandemic is like being a mid-level comic. Because established comics, they're going to make their money. They have their podcasts. They have other revenue streams. And when clubs start opening back up, they're the first people to start performing. Big headliners. It was also really interesting seeing big headliners because they were desperate for stage time too, because a lot of theaters and arenas and whatever big stadiums they were used to playing, those weren't open yet. So they actually moved to the small comedy clubs that mid-level comics perform at, which they don't usually do. So it's kind of like if you're a mid-level comic, you're not going to get booked. Because all the head honcho people are doing your spots. And I'm not complaining, all All right, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that's why it's the most awkward time to be a comic right now. Just because everyone kind of took a step, took a half a step down in terms of where they were performing. I will tell you that comedy really helped me see with my own eyes, like really, really see the importance of diversity. And a lot of people, including me, always understand why diversity is important conceptually. You can rationalize, yeah, we want a difference of opinions and voices just so, you know, the ideas that come out of the interaction are better. They're going to be richer by very nature. You can understand that conceptually, but doing comedy, man, you just realize the best crowds and the most fun crowds are diverse. Actually, every single crowd that has been extremely diverse has been fucking awesome. The vibe is always so much more fun than if you just have one type of person, one type of race. You do an all-white crowd, it sucks. You do an all-hipster crowd, it sucks. You do an all-black crowd, sucks. All-Asian crowd, fucking sucks. But you throw a little bit of yellow, a little bit of red, a little bit of white and black, a little bit of brown in there, mix it up, it's so much fun. Because things you say, it has to resonate with one group. You know? And so laughter just spreads. I think also comedy is all about making sure that people are uncomfortable. And if you're in a group, in a room full of people who you're not really similar to, then yeah, you're going to be a little bit more uncomfortable and not like settled in and as judgmental. If it's all homogenous, the audience is kind of going to take a us versus you mentality. Everyone has the same way of looking at things, so if you're trying to tell a joke and you're not part of that group, you really have to cater to that group's viewpoint. That's just the truth. Another great example of how diversity is so important is like, you know what were some like the most fun groups that were put together? Very few times can you like point to a group of people in your adulthood and be like, man, I fucking love that group. It's because when you're an adult, you tend to do things and tend to associate with people who are similar to you because you're an adult. You have the choice to do it. But when you're a kid, I'll tell you which groups are the best. Dude, some of the best groups I've ever been a part of were just public school classes. Because that shit is truly random. They just mash us all together based off of nothing. Different race, different like social skills. You had like popular chicks, you had fucking losers, you had incels, you had crazy dudes, you had the jocks. You had the nerdy kids. And I think everyone has been in at least one class where the vibe was just fucking so much fun and you guys felt like you were a family. And it's interesting because you'll look around and you'll be like, if it wasn't for the fact that school is forcing us all to hang out together for 8 hours a day, we would never hang out together. There was no reason for me to talk to fucking, you know, the weird incel kid in class. Why else would I talk to him? But yeah, it's it can be a really fun time. So that's, you know, diversity is just extremely important also. Just because I think a lot of the race issues that stem in this country or like are in this country stem from the fact that groups don't really know each other. Like once you actually know people of a race, you can't hate them. It's just impossible. If you spend a lot of time with a certain race or a certain group, it's impossible to hate them. Doesn't matter who you are. If you're surrounded by them, you're not going to hate them. Because you just realize that everyone's the fucking same. Everyone's the same. At their core. But on the surface, because there are like cultural differences, it's kind of hard to see that everyone is similar. I'll give you an example. A couple months ago, there was the, you know, Rashard Brooks, and I think he was in Atlanta. He got shot by the cops. And you could look at that tape and you could be like, well, he deserved to get shot because he reached for the cop's taser and then he ran. Which, that rationale is ridiculous in itself, but it's like, yeah, he was doing some dangerous shit. But the thing is, that's with people who don't know, who've never met black people. Because Rashard Brooks, he was a black dude. And if you don't actually know black people, you might think, oh, he's a thug. If you've met black people, you know that dude is harmless just by the way he is. He's just like, he reminded me of like a harmless uncle. That was the vibe he gave me. But if you don't know a race and how they are and their mannerisms, you're not going to understand their behavior. So being able to like, diversity is key in terms of just actually being able to take steps towards ending racism. I mean, I think what we should do in this country, here's my idea, all right, is we need to fly, like the government should pay to fly people in Nebraska or white people living in super rural areas to like South Side Chicago and Harlem and just have them live there. Just have them live there for like 8 months. That would solve a lot of racism, I think. I feel like a white dude, no matter how racist they are, if they actually had to live life surrounded by black people, they just couldn't be racist anymore. They just couldn't. They just see how similar they were. I think that's what you should do. There shouldn't be, if you're living in an area which is extremely homogenous, the government should pay you to travel out of that area into an area where, you know, you're a minority. Your race is the minority. I think that applies to all races, you know? It would be good. But that would cost too much money and we're going to stimulate the economy. I mean, I'm just talking out my ass here, but I feel like the idea is not half bad. All right. Well, that's a lot of comedy talk and diversity talk. Dude, I took a... I'm starting to take Muay Thai classes, and I'm getting real fucking tired. Because I also took, like, a jiu-jitsu class, like, 2 weeks ago. I am getting real fucking tired of how unassuming martial artists look. It's really annoying. You'll see guys who are just out of shape. Like, my fucking Brazilian jiu-jitsu class, the teachers who were teaching it, they had bellies. They had big bellies. But they'll fuck you up. I don't trust anyone anymore. My fucking Muay Thai instructor, he's like a 50-year-old white dude. Skinny dude. Gray hair. And when I found out he was going to be teaching the class, I was like, what did I regret paying you guys. What the fuck? But then, like, he would show us the moves, and bro, he's lightning quick. Fucking nimble. Just able to, like, kick like it was nothing. He's able to kick my head with the ease of giving someone a high five. It was so impressive. I was like, damn, I'm never judging a book by its cover ever again. Like I said in previous podcasts, I'm scared of everyone now. I don't judge. I just assume everyone can kick my ass. I did have to fucking partner up with this dude who was 230 pounds, and he wasn't 230 pounds of fat. He was straight 230 pounds of like muscle. He was like 6'4", 6'5". Like maybe it wasn't 230, maybe it was like 220, 210. He was a big boy. Oh God. There's these drills we have to do where you like kick to the leg or kick to the body, but you're supposed to do it gently. But you're still making contact with the person. He was kicking as gently as possible, and he was hurting me badly. My leg is bruised. He was kicking the inside of my leg. He was just tapping it, but he's got so much mass behind his leg. I just have internal bleeding in my leg now. I tried to be a good partner and just withstand the pain, but it fucking hurt. I didn't say anything, but it fucking hurt a lot. Size matters, bro. I mean, there's a reason why there's weight classes. There's a reason. I mean, you get big enough to a certain point, you don't really need to know anything. You're just big, and you can outpower everyone. There was a show a couple years ago. It was called Shaq Versus. I think that's what the name was. The premise of the show was Shaq would try different sports and see how he would do at them. There was one episode where he boxed Oscar De La Hoya. Oscar De La Hoya is one of the greatest boxers in the modern era. I mean, he's retired now, but you know, he was a fucking beast back in the day. But he's only 145 pounds. So they were boxing in the ring, and Shaq was just toying with him, like a cat toying with a mouse. If Shaq tried, he could have killed Oscar De La Hoya, and Shaq has no boxing experience. Zero. Doesn't matter about all those years of training. Doesn't matter that he's like a world championship boxer. He's just only 145 pounds, and you're not gonna hurt Shaq. I saw a video of Shaq doing MMA. What are you doing, Shaq? You're just wasting everyone's time. You don't need it, dude. Someone could shoot Shaq with a shotgun, it would just bounce right off. He's that fucking big. Shaquille O'Neal. So talented, bro. That guy is legitimately like a quadruple threat. He can rap. He can play basketball. He can act. Don't tell me he can't act. In Kazam, the movie might not have been good, but Shaq was a good actor. He did a good job acting in Kazam. And then, you know, the fourth thing is he's funny. He's a comic. If Shaq did stand up, he would he would be fucking incredible. He would be so good. He can that dude can do anything he wants. I just feel sad now. I'm like, fuck. Some people just have it. They just are the total package. All right. Let's all let's end on that note so we can all think about how Shaq is just he's just a better man. All right, guys, remember to rate and review and shit. 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. I'll see you guys later.